Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Illustration Department Podcast. My name is Giuseppe Castellano. In this podcast, I talk to folks in illustration, graphic design, publishing, animation, and other creative fields about their beginnings, their successes, and the bumps and bruises they've experienced along the way. In this episode, my guest is Daryl Cheng, author of The New Plant Parent and creator of Houseplant Journal. Illustrators often find themselves drawing and painting plants. Too often, however, they approach plants as afterthoughts, or as Daryl calls it, plant blindness. Among other topics, he shares his technical and philosophical approach to houseplant care, and we both explain why it's important to remember that not every plant is the same, whether you're growing or illustrating them. I had a sound snafu, so Daryl had to record my audio. Let's just pretend we recorded this in person in a greenhouse surrounded by Daryl's plants. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Listeners are used to, you know, hearing from illustrators or designers or art directors or agents, and we're talking about things like watercolor techniques or digital brushes or style or, you know, winning the Caldecott medal and things like that. So, but today we're going to be talking about plants. Mm-hmm. I have a connection. Okay. Tenuous though it might be. The reason I asked you to be a guest was because you're one of my favorite Instagram.
Oh, really? Feeds. Oh, thank you so much.
My God. Absolutely. I think I first discovered you when someone had posted maybe on Twitter or something, a time-lapse video that you had done of a plant. Mm. And it just so intrigued me because basically you're taking a plant's own sort of how plants live in our timeline, in our sort of speed of time, mm-hmm. and fast forward it to like what we would recognize. So it was obvious, we could see it, mm-hmm. how they move, how they react.
Yeah, I call that sort of looking at it from, so humans, we experience life in seconds and minutes, right?
Right.
But then plants generally in that time frame, you don't see anything going on. But mm-hmm. if you kind of extrapolate it, then plants experience their moments in days and weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically you align their moments with ours. We could see
yes.
how they are truly living, breathing, reacting pets. I mean, they are companions.
Absolutely.
What the heck does this have to do with illustration? Well,
I'm curious to hear this too.
Here it is. Illustrators that I talk to a lot. I have had conversations with illustrators who were like, oh yeah, I'd like more plants in my studio. I'd like more plants in my workspace, but I kill plants all the time. And I happen to believe, and this isn't a novel belief or anything, but I truly do feel that having more plants in your space improves everything. Physically, mentally, all of it. And the mental challenges of illustration are very real. So why not do everything you can to like ease that mental struggle by having plants accompany you on your journey as an illustrator? That's my connection. Mm-hmm. You don't sound very convinced, but
I thought you were going to ask me like to go into something about that. Well, but yeah,
oh, sure. we're getting there.
Okay.
So that's my connection. And so, that's really what I want to talk to you about. And I'd like to start just really simply first. Where did you grow up?
Born and raised in Toronto, Canada.
Yeah. And are you still there?
Yeah, still there.
Help me understand like where you got to where you currently are with respect to plants. Was this thing? Was this always something that you were interested in? Or like, where is that connection?
Roughly 6 years ago, like I was still living at home. My mom said, hey, help me decorate the house with some houseplants. And I said, okay, sure. But she added, but you need to figure out how to take care of them because she claimed to be bad with plants. I think that's a kind of a ubiquitous thing that people's first gut reaction is, oh, I'm not good with plants, like houseplants in particular.
Right.
And the thing that really like kind of confused me was because, well, she taught me how to do outdoor gardening. We know how to like, she knew how to grow vegetables and have like annuals and perennials. So I figured like, well, what's so different about indoor plants? But she kept going back to this narrative of, oh, I have a black thumb or something like that.
Right.
So I said, okay, well, I'll buy a bunch of plants. And, you know, I'm a guy who loves hobbies. I mean, I'm on an illustration podcast, but I will say I only, you know, did more illustration when I was young as a kid, you know, go to art lessons, that kind of thing. Uh-huh. But as I got older, I think I did more hobbies in terms of music and photography. And so I figured, okay, well, why not just extend that interest to houseplants? And I think anytime you really love a hobby, you want to dig in and look for all the things you can find about it. And in terms of photography and music, there's plenty of that on YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. Or even just internet in general. Right. But when you look at stuff for houseplants, you kind of run into the same old vague and somewhat unhelpful advice over and over again. Things like, oh, it's bright and direct light. Water once a week. Don't overwater. And like,
yeah.
I just, as a technical person, I just, it literally hurt me to hear that and realize that, is this all you guys are going with? So anyway, that aside, I decided, okay, I'm just going to start houseplant journal. Literally a journal for my houseplants. And I guess, well, I started on Tumblr, but nobody really uses that. And then I went to Instagram, and there was a period of time when Instagram first allowed 15-second video clips. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I posted, you know, I started posting time-lapse videos. And those things kind of, I guess, went viral, and a lot of different media outlets picked it up. And that's sort of how, you know, I grew the account. But then parallel to that, I was also writing about how I was taking care of plants, but in a more precise way, like talking about, especially talking about light in terms of measuring it, not just, you know, blanket statement, bright and direct light, as if that means anything.
Right.
So that's really parallel to that, writing about plant care in my kind of special, I guess, I've come to coin it as like an engineer's approach to houseplant care. Mm-hmm. And that eventually caught the attention of a literary agent and publishers. And so then, like, I took some time and wrote a book about all my experiences with plants, and then that's sort of how I came to publish the book The New Plant Parent.
There's another connection. I talked to a lot of authors on this podcast, so it's perfectly natural to have you as a guest. Where does that analytical approach come from?
My background is engineering, so I, like, even in my old job, I used to design training materials, and so I was always very interested in, like, how do you optimally teach someone something, right? And when you look at what's written out there for houseplant care as a sort of assessment of the quality of the instruction, it's terrible. And so that's how I decided, okay, well, what are the things that are, I mean, just downright misleading people in terms of houseplant care? And I would say, like, I also like to think very philosophically. So there's only really two major philosophical themes that are plaguing houseplant care in terms of, like I call them like two major barriers that people are facing in houseplant care. And first is, they think that if I follow certain steps, the plant will look perfect forever. That's the first problem. Yep. And the second problem is, they're not precise enough about how the plant works in terms of realizing that watering is completely dependent on light, not the other way around, which is you just have a plant, put it anywhere you want, and then just remember to water, and that's all you need to do.
Yeah, I mean, would you say overwatering is the biggest mistake?
So I have even a different statement about that, which is that even the idea that overwatering is the biggest mistake is in itself a bad concept, because if you put a plant just wherever you want and without ever assessing the light situation for that plant, then there is no correct way to water. It is just slowly dying, because the system of a plant is, think about what a plant is. It is a solar powered little sugar factory, right? So if the factory is sitting too far away from your window, then what's happening? It's chugging along real slowly, making those sugars, right? And what happens if you like, okay, I'm going to go right into it and talk about how I measure light. And when you see that number on the light meter, like, what does that number even mean? To me, I literally see it as, okay, if you only had $50 to buy the food that you need for the whole week, don't you think you'd go hungry?
Sure.
Yeah. So,
especially in this family where we have three kids who just literally eat everything before you even get them out of the bags.
Well, exactly. So when I see the number 50 foot candles, just ignore all the units of everything for it. Just take the number for now. Like, if I have my plant sitting in a corner and I take a light meter and I measure it and it's 50 foot candles, then I am literally like feeling for the plant and saying, oh, I'm sorry, you're pretty much starving back here. Mm-hmm. But then you take your plant and move it closer to the window. And now you take a light meter and you see the number 200. Well, now you're like, oh, okay, now you're, you know, doing much better.
Right.
And it's this level of precision that is needed in terms of talking about light, because just your average, you know, first blush understanding of light, oh, this northwest window, south window, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, high, medium, low. Like these things don't mean anything, because
right.
people can put their plants 10 feet from the window and still say that it's next to the east facing window, or they can put it right in front. And until you use a light meter, you'll never understand that there could be 100 times difference between that.
So you recommend even the most like casual plant owner should get a light meter.
Oh, no. Okay. So if you want to like be as casual as you can, like you just want, you know, the best possible experience, you're not interested in buying a light meter or moisture meter or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
Then the simplest advice I can say is put your plants right in front of the window, like absolutely right, as close as you can. Mm-hmm. That's the simplest advice I can give, because that's the best possible light that you can give a plant. And now the other thing is to realize that indoors we are basically living in a cave, because the walls and ceiling are opaque to the sky. Mm-hmm. The thing is, the very popular idea is to say, oh, it thrives in low light. But here's the thing. Low light, as described by a horticulturalist, means a place where the sun is only unobstructed for a very short duration of time, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, under like, you know, a bunch of leaves or something, under a forest canopy, you might have a few breaks in the leaves or the branches, then, you know, the whole day the sun will be kind of filtered through the leaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what about inside your home? Your ceiling and your walls are basically like opaque. So that's sort of like a cave.
You've listed like several things that I'm definitely a culprit of. Like, I have some plants that I was told, oh, this is a low light plant. Cause you know, I used to live in an apartment and we didn't have a whole lot of windows, but I wanted a whole lot of plants. And I think now that I look back on this, I think I just couldn't have what I wanted because I didn't have enough space, good space for the plants, but I didn't know that at the time. So I would get all these plants and some of them would be okay. Some of them would be great. Some of them would die.
Mm-hmm.
And I was definitely in that camp where I would see a yellow leaf and be like, oh, it's definitely thirsty. Got to water it, you know, or I'd see like a little tip of a leaf start sort of browning and kind of hardening and dying, but the rest of the leaf was fine. So I cut the brown part off. You know, just these things that you do follow all these, you know, guidelines and stuff and end up killing all these plants. And so that's definitely why I'm having you on this, have you here. My question is, so for folks listening who like just kill everything,
mm-hmm.
they hear you. Okay, fine. I'll put some stuff in front of windows, but I don't have that many windows. You know, it's not a possibility for me to put all of my plants next to windows. So what do you say to them? Do you say, look, well, you can't have any plants, or is there something else that they can be doing?
Well, it's like this, like we almost have to take like a, it's like a grown-up approach to this and say, look, if I lived in the desert and I said, hey, I want to build a, like a home here. And, you know, I want to have a pool and palm trees and everything. And it's like, well, you could, but then you're going to be really defying nature with all this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in a sense, yes, if you're not going to invest in any, like, let's say grow lights or anything, then the best your plants will do is really a factor of, like, pretty much how many windowsills you have in the space right in front of it. And not only that, the physical size of your windows. So it's like this. Instead of thinking that, you know, people who have a quote unquote green thumb are somehow, you know, better with plants, I my argument is these are probably just people with huge unobstructed windows.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, the people who are most disappointed with the plants are the people who have small windows, but also who put them maybe far away from the window.
Right.
But in any case, like, it's like this. You put your plants as close to the window as possible. That's not to guarantee that they'll be perfect forever. That's to guarantee that they are getting the absolute best light they can.
Mm-hmm.
The second part to this is now it depends on the type of plant, because honestly, not all plants to me are good long-term plants. Some of them just kind of grow and turn gangly and like they just don't look that nice after a few months to a few years, right?
Right.
And mm-hmm. here's the thing that I guess it's hard for me to say this, but like, okay, I don't sell any plants, but if somebody who sold plants, they don't really have any interest in telling you, oh, this one, you know, gets to this kind of ugly shape in like a year and a half or 2 years time, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Nobody would ever, like anyone who sells plants, all they care about is you like the look of the plant now, you buy it, and I give you some tips and that's, and you're off on your merry way, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But for me, as a person who looks at this as a long-term hobby, now I look at it as, okay, I have an interior space. I understand my environmental conditions. I understand the amount of effort that I'm willing to put into this. So now I look at the plants as being like, okay, who's going to perform the best for me in the long term?
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like I took the blame off myself and said, now it's up to the species of plant to say whether you're a good long-term plant or not.
Right. I have a gardenia in my office that is next to a window and is flowering. The leaves do drop and it is yellowing, and I have not, I've keep myself from watering it because I keep feeling the soil and the soil feels damp. So I don't know if it needs water. It's getting plenty of light. It's hurting. So I've definitely made tons of mistakes. I'm continuing to make mistakes. So what are the, for folks listening and for me, okay, great. So I want more plants in my space. It is proven that they just improve mental health. They improve air quality. It's just good to have them in your home. Hmm. What would be a tip or two? I mean, what would be the first step? What would that person want to think about when they're you know, adding this greenery to their space?
Mm-hmm. I would say first take a look at your window or the windows that you have, and, you know, take note of the size. Hopefully they're, you know, relatively large. And then take note of how many hours the sun actually shines directly through the window.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why I have to say it like this is because nobody has the same size windows. Nobody has the same obstructions outside. So to kind of just label an east-facing window as if just because your window faces east and my window faces east, that there's any kind of similarity, like, that to me makes no sense.
Yeah.
You got to be more precise. Number of hours the sun shines directly on it. And then the second thing is just the physical size of the window. And for some people, maybe the number of windows, because people with more windows also have a much better light situation.
Sure.
So that's the first step. And then the second thing is you start with the plants that are quote unquote easy plants. I don't even like talking about plants as if they were some kind of video game with the difficulty level. Like, because then that kind of, again, puts the onus on you to, as if your skill has anything, like, I mean, as if your skill was the only thing that, you know, deals with the plant care, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, just look for these quote unquote easy plants, like pothos, philodendron, dracaena, snake plants, ZZ plant, any of these plants, I can name off like a, like there's already several dozens within those, you know, few that I named.
Right.
And just put them right in front of your window. All right. That's the first, that's the second thing. You bought the plants. Mm-hmm. The third thing is talking about watering. Now, with watering, I kind of already like boiled it down to there's really only three different ways to water a plant. First of all, it's never by a schedule. It's always by looking at how dry the soil is. The skill here, I guess, is to be able to know when to water it, meaning you have to know the difference between a fully wet soil versus fully dry soil, right?
Right.
So once you know that, like, let's call that 100% saturation and then 0%, right?
Right.
So there's only three different ways that you can possibly water a plant. The first type is called water when completely dry. That means you wait until the soil reaches total dryness before you water it again. Mm-hmm. And so snake plants, cacti, succulents, all of these plants are that type of watering. The second type is water when partially dry. So somewhere in the 50% range, that's time to water again. And most of your leafy foliate, like tropical plants, that's the kind of watering, that, like that's the strategy that you should take for watering those plants.
Okay.
And then the last one, which I'm sure you can kind of guess now, is keep the soil evenly moist. So even when the, like when it's 100% saturation, if you think of it like a gas tank, it's like, it hits like, once it hits 75 or before it even hits 50, it's time to water again.
Got it.
And one plant in particular that you need to do this with is called maidenhair fern. I'm not sure if you've heard, you know, heard different plants, but people call this plant like a diva or something like that. But it's really not, you know, so dramatic. It's just the fact that you have to keep it soiled evenly moist.
Yep.
Okay. Although I understand that everything I just said about those three strategies is kind of abstract, but I want you to realize that now I've just told you how to water any plant. Any plant is only one of those three.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that plants have personality?
It's really funny that it's almost as if like today on a story on Instagram, I was talking about how I actually try not to personify plants too much. If you do that, then you kind of start treating the plant like it's a character, like a person. And then you say like, oh, this person's finicky, that person's picky, blah, blah, blah. And
right.
Like, I'd rather look at plants like plants and treat them like like they have special, like I treat them like they're almost like magical creatures that have special abilities to survive that are just totally different from animals. And to me, that's far more fascinating to kind of, you know, witness. Like for example, propagation. You can cut a piece of a plant off and you give it enough time and the right conditions, it'll grow a whole new plant for you. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I thought I do that with rosemary.
Yeah, yeah.
Propagates pretty easily. Lavender, roses. Although roses are hit and miss with me, man. I know what to do. I haven't successfully propagated it for any long period of time. It'll propagate, it'll root a little, and it'll leaf a little, and then it'll die.
All the things you just named there are I consider to be outdoor plants.
Yeah.
Yeah, because for example, roses actually need to have like unobstructed sun, meaning you can't have a window in front of it. And the other thing is it also needs day and night temperature variation. Indoors, you don't really get much different between like maybe 5 or 6 degrees.
Would you say that's why it's hard to tell. I'm sure my gardenia is just not happy.
Okay, so let's
go back
to
gardenia. I know I'm personifying it.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Let's go back to gardenia. So remember how I talked about like what I consider to be good long-term plants versus short-term or all that kind of thing. So gardenia is not that it's a bad long-term plant, but rather the way that it grows is such that it keeps growing new leaves at the tips of its stems. At the same time, its older leaves just keep falling off.
Right.
So it's almost as if the net total number of leaves is generally constant. Mm-hmm. And that's why if it grows new ones, it has to drop old ones. So
that's what's happening.
That's what's happening. And then, for example, like when I was in my kind of quest to learn how to take care of different types of plants, you know, I had these old auntie friends who had gardenias for like, you know, 20 years. And so I asked them like, well, how do you keep it this long, right? And mm-hmm. she would say, well, you know, every few years she just has to chop it right back so that it's just like down to a stump. And then it grows the new stems out of the stumps.
Huh.
So it means to say that you almost can't assume that the plant is going to look the same forever. You have to kind of know how it grows. So then you can then decide sort of like how you want to style it or how you want it to live with you. Right. So for instance, like, you know, I have a Monstera deliciosa, like, you know, that huge plant with the big leaves that called Swiss cheese plant. Right.
Yep.
Like people need to know that this plant is just going to, I mean, the reason why it's called a Monstera or monster is because it will outgrow your space very quickly. Right. Mm. So for me, like I knew this. So once it grew to a certain size, so then I just chopped off two of its, you know, leading growths. I rooted them and then I planted them. And then I keep those two pieces. And then the other bigger part is like still at my old church, right?
Right.
So that I have the new two pieces now. And then in a few years' time, those two pieces will probably outgrow my own space. So then I'm going to have to cut them back again, right? But mm-hmm. the point is, I'm never going to sort of be sad because it's not the same plant that I used to have. I mean, technically it is the same plant, but it's just that the form of the plant has to evolve, and it's constantly evolving.
This episode is sponsored by Skillshare. Skillshare is offering listeners of the Illustration Department podcast a free trial of premium membership. If you're going to take just one online class, let it be with the ID. If you're going to take two online classes, take one with Skillshare. They offer fascinating classes on topics including productivity, freelancing and entrepreneurship, creative writing, and much more. Many of you know that I hate the word perfect. It is a word that does not serve us as artists. Let's agree to replace perfect with progress. So, practice makes progress. Whatever goal you have in mind, advancing toward it is achievable with short lessons, hands-on projects, and classes you can fit within your schedule. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/ID, where you will get a free trial of premium membership. That's 2 weeks free at Skillshare.com/ID. Now back to my conversation with Daryl Cheng.
Outgrowing your space, that's something that I'm finding something that I need to learn more, way more about. Do you find that people buy different by the wrong sized pots for their plants? Doesn't the pot size matter more than maybe the everyday person understands? Like, you can't get a gigantic pot and get like a jade plant, a teeny tiny jade plant, and stick it in the middle and think like, oh, it'll just grow into the pot.
Right. Well, no, you're right. So I think the pot size issue is something that is almost like it's sort of customized for every different type of plant, because every different plant has sort of a growth potential, a maximum size, a maximum practical size even. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, you're talking about jade. Like I remember I bought my father-in-law a huge jade plant that was pretty much like a little tree, right? And so for that type of plant, yeah, it's got to be into like almost like a 14-inch diameter pot.
Right.
But if you're starting with a tiny single cutting, well, you got to start that into, you know, a small 4-inch pot. And then as it gets taller and taller, you know, you might want to go bigger. The other thing too is that, you know, roots, they kind of grow in mass kind of relatively the same as the top part, right? So if you can imagine your top part of your plant is getting taller and taller, your roots are growing longer and longer as well. Mm-hmm. And the main driver for repotting a plant is because the roots have kind of like encircled the base so much that it's forming like a hard mass. It's called being root bound. And so in order to, you know, alleviate that, you got to pot it up to a larger size pot. But of course, there's a limit to that. Like you can't just keep growing bigger and bigger roots. Because again, I said every different plant kind of stops. It has a kind of intrinsic maximum size, you know?
Right. You know, this is, I have another connection. I just made. So I talked to a lot of illustrators and about their work, and all of them, most of them, have some kind of plant life in their illustrations, mm-hmm. whether it's a house plant inside of a bedroom of, you know, a little kid playing, or it's a, you know, house plants outside in the garden, or trees in the woods, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the common mistake is too strong of a word, but mistake is that I see is that they just kind of go, a tree's a tree. Who cares? Grass is grass. It's all the same. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Shrubs are shrubs. And there's a generic kind of approach to that. And I always encourage them to not think of plants that way. I mean, right? I mean, wouldn't you agree that, like, for illustrators listening, the next plant you draw and paint, think about this. Think about, like, how magical these creatures are and how they have different, pardon, personalities and different idiosyncrasies and needs and movements and all that kind of thing, and approach them that way, I think would make the illustration far more effective and far more interesting and original, and showing the respect of the plants within your illustrations as well as the plants within your studio. Where could you go wrong?
Mm-hmm. So this is a concept that, which is called plant blindness, which is to say that humans have a bias to only pay attention to other humans first, then animals, then plants. And they almost treat plants like just as a background thing. Yeah. So that's why, you know, when you paint something or illustrate whatever, like the subject, quote unquote, is usually going to be a person or an animal.
Yep.
Or a specific object or something, right? Yep. And plants, landscape, just become background.
Yep.
But then it also plays into, like you were talking about, you know, just painting a generic looking plant, that also plays into people's mentality of care, which is that if their plant doesn't look the way that it looked when they bought it from the nursery, or that, you know, when they're raised in a nursery, they look a certain way, and then when they've lived in your space for a little while, you know, it doesn't look the same, then they concern that something's wrong. But I'm telling you, the plants are growing the best they possibly can. Like, they are trying their hardest.
Yeah. I mean, that's usually in the illustration space, it's ferns. People just draw ferns. They don't care. It doesn't matter where the story takes place. Ferns. What should I put underneath this tree? Put some ferns. And they're all very generic and all very, and here's the other thing. No brown spots. Every leaf is absolutely perfect.
That's exactly how I can easily tell, like, a fake plant from a real plant. Is that if I see, like, a picture or in a mall or something, like, I can spot it from a mile away if it's fake, because it literally has no brown tips, no yellowing leaves. But the thing is, even if the gardener or whoever came and took them all away, there's still, you know, really, really fine details of, like, let's say a new leaf coming, like a new frond coming out, mm-hmm. or even just the overall shape of the plant. Like, those kinds of cues, that's sort of like the things that, you know, it's the same as how, like, because as a human, you can easily tell, like, a mannequin versus a mm-hmm. real person, because mm-hmm. we're so accustomed to, you know, the fine details of what it means to be a living person, right?
Yeah.
Well, for somebody who's really obsessed with plants, like, they can easily tell a fake plant from a real one.
Yeah. I mean, my hope is that illustrators are listening to this, and the next time they draw a spider plant or something in their illustration, maybe one of those, maybe, you know, a couple of those leaves are yellowed. Maybe one of them's brown. You know, give it, ask yourself, how has time affected this plant? Mm-hmm. And how old is that plant? How is this character treating that plant? How are they attentive? You know, that can lead to good storytelling.
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes on Instagram I post, like, pictures of my weird looking succulents, like, they're kind of long and lanky. Yeah. And I literally call this plants with character, because you will not find the identical, like, a plant that looks just like that somewhere else, right?
Yep.
And I think it's also like, you know, now that we've, because of Instagram, you know, we get to see people's different people's spaces. Sure. And, you know, there's one account that I really like. It's called Urban Jungle Blog. And they feature, you know, lots of plant filled spaces. But, you know, there's a kind of skill, I think, in being able to look at a space and being able to see that the plants that are in there have been there for a long time versus they were staged there for a photo shoot.
Right.
I'm going to tell you, the trick is you have to look at the light. The light situation will dictate whether that plant can even be there for the long term.
Yeah. It really must bother you to look at like magazine spreads. And you can see how the photograph of like an interior or something, and they put the plants there to make it look nice. But if you look at that image, it must bug the crap out of you to see plant going.
I literally see it as, well, I hope no one's actually thinking that they can put the plant there. I mean, sure, it looks nice, you know, as a composition.
Right.
But I look at plants maybe from that engineering mindset, like it's just not going to work there, you know?
Mm-hmm. I have a Christmas cactus
that's a really nice long-term plant. I know people who have these for decades.
Yeah. It does very well. It's very happy. It's in our family room and there's plenty of light in there. Mm-hmm. It's currently flowering as we speak.
Nice.
These really long, real long, like the length of my pinky red flowers, which is really pretty. You were mentioning jungle earlier, urban jungle. It reminds me, there's this, one of my favorite illustrators from the mid-1900s is Margaret Bloy Graham. And she illustrated a book written by her then husband. I think they were married at the time. This was in the 1950s, called The Plant Sitter. And it's about a boy who cares for all the neighbor's plants while they're away on summer vacation. So he can't go on vacation because he's the plant sitter.
Okay.
One of the funnier little bits of information from this book is that he gets 2 cents a plant a day to take care of these plants. And this was published in 1959. And just for a little bit of context, Where the Wild Things Are, which I'm sure you're familiar with, that was published in 1963. It was the same publisher. So 4 years before Where the Wild Things Are. And anyway, so he's taking care of more and more plants. The house is a huge jungle. There's plants everywhere. His parents are annoyed. But at the end, you know, the plants go away and everyone misses them. They miss them as if they are part of the family. Do you caution against that kind of attachment or do you encourage it?
Absolutely not. I think it's completely natural to connect with a living thing. So I call this this concept the ABC of houseplant appreciation. Okay. That is to say, okay, traditionally, the sort of first idea of, you know, appreciating plants is just for their for aesthetics. Like we just like the way they look, right? Mm-hmm. But if you go deeper than that, we have B for biology. That is, we are just fascinated by like the way that they live. You know, I talked about propagation and that kind of thing, right? So that's something that can also bring you joy. And C is for companionship. That is just literally plants can be your friends. And it's as real as to say, you know, I have my Monstera here. If you just took this Monstera away and gave me another one, like it wouldn't be the same. I wouldn't feel like I would lose that connection. The same way that in this book, you know, you lost the connection of the companionship of those plants.
Yep.
It's like, I think of, you know, pet care, like people who have dogs and cats, like they can enjoy the company of their cats and enjoy having the pets around completely regardless of whether they post about them on Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in much the same way, I mean, of course, I am on Instagram a lot, but like, I can derive the same joy from my plants even without ever posting about them because there is that real connection with them.
Definitely. You're going to cringe. I apologize in advance. So we used to live in Brooklyn and I'm trying very hard not to. For a few episodes, I kept talking about how we left Brooklyn and moved to Pennsylvania. and someone commented that I talked too much about it. But in this, there's context here, so I have to mention it. Anyway, lived in Brooklyn. I had this maybe 6 foot by 12 foot outdoor little garden, and in it was a 5 year old rosemary bush that was, I took care of, and I just, it was just so beautiful and so huge, and I loved it so dearly. I ripped it out of the ground, and I looked, I tried to do it the right way. You know, I looked at tutorials on how to move plants, and so I tried to do it the right way. I really did. Uh-huh. We got here, as soon as we got here, put it in a pot, took care of it, like, you know, put it where it needed to be, whatever. And it died. Hmm. And it broke my damn heart. I still think of that plant, and it breaks my heart. I feel like I killed it. And
well, yeah,
such a partner. I would talk to it all the time in the summer times. I mean, it just the more I talk about it, the more I feel upset by it.
Oh yeah, I've about the connection thing. Like I think of plants that you know garden plants, because obviously I didn't take them out of the ground, right? So I do miss like certain plants that I used to just walk around my parents' old backyard and be like, hey, how's this little ivy doing? Like we used to have a Virginia creeper, and it just climbed all over the fence. It made the fence a beautiful green, basically a green wall, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I absolutely love that plant. And there was a time when I was really upset that the other side neighbors had, some fencing work done. And when they did that, they took down half the fence and in the process killed half of the plant. So I was like, what? This was like part of our fence. Anyway, but yeah. Virginia creeper is somewhat invasive. So it really just took over back the next 2 years. So it was okay.
Yeah. So I could talk to you literally all day about this, because I want to be very mindful of your time. There are illustrators listening, you know, and mm-hmm. folks who are, I'm hoping, my fingers are crossed, that after this episode, or maybe they're listening to this episode in the car on the way to the plant shop, go get more plants, folks. It's better. It's good for you. What would you want to say to them? What would be one last little bit of advice, a little plant advice, a little plant philosophy, perhaps, that you'd like to leave them with?
Sure. So I'll say it like this. The happiest plant owners are the ones who appreciate the balance between environment, effort, and expectations. I call this like the three E's, right? So in terms of the environment, you really have to understand your light conditions. That's basically the main thing, because again, plants are little sugar factories, or solar powered sugar factories.
Yeah.
Secondly, effort is, just try your best with care. You don't have to be perfect when you start. So just give yourself some slack and try your best with it, right? Read books. You can pick up my book, The New Plant Parent, or you can read, blogs. You can read what people say to do as suggestions. They're not rules. These are suggestions that hopefully people have done and, work for them. Then that will make it a lot easier to feel like you're following, different plant care things, because they're not rules, they're just suggestions. And in terms of the expectation, well, let nature take its course. Like nature includes both growth and decay. We can't have one without the other. So when it happens, when you lose a leaf, when the tips turn brown, like it's not necessarily that the whole plant is dying. I mean, as long as you're keeping them as close to the window as possible. So it's like allowing room for nature to be there.
To learn more about Daryl, visit houseplantjournal.com. If you enjoyed our conversation, please share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, and provide a positive rating and review. Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/illustrationdept. In return, you'll receive our soft enamel pin, a reusable discount code for 10% off, and access to patron-only episodes we're calling Extra Credit. This podcast is produced by the Illustration Department, a global leader in online education for illustrators. Visit us at illustrationdept.com for class offerings, testimonials, the Alumni Showcase, the podcast show notes, our forum, the bookshop, and more. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.